podcast that brings you one guest, one question, one answer. Business insights in minutes, not hours, with your host, the small business and franchise expert, Gary Occhiogrosso.
Well, hello again, and welcome to another edition of Mastermind Minutes. My name is Gary Occhiogrosso. I am the managing partner for Franchise Growth Solutions, and you can learn all about Franchise Growth Solutions by going to our website and finding out about us. Mastermind Minutes, for those of you who are joining us for the first time, is a very simple concept, simple podcast. It is typically one question, one guest, and one answer. I say typically because sometimes we do have more than one question that comes out of the conversation. But it's done in minutes, not hours, and there'll be valuable insights. And if a few minutes is not enough to learn about our topic, you can always contact our guest or our guest company and learn more about what they do. And today I have the extreme honor, really, of having a guest on, Steve Schultz, who is the co-founder and CEO of Nectar Juice Bar. Now, Steve, for those of you who are in our industry, you know he's an award-winning serial entrepreneur, named top 20 people to watch. He's a speaker, mentor, thought leader, and father. He's grown Nectar Juice Bar into the clear leader, really the clear leader and pioneering champion of the elevated juice bar experience in the $2.2 billion industry. And I'll tell you personally, I've been in juice bars. Some of them in New York City aren't really as appealing, appetizing, and maybe not where you really want to buy some juice. But Nectar Juice Bar definitely is the champion in elevated experience, in elevating that experience. Seeing an opportunity to disrupt and refine the space, Steve co-founded Nectar with his wife, Alexis, in 2010. With a promise to reinvent a restaurant category that had lost its way. Steve has successfully developed the brand into a catalyst for change, vowing ingredient integrity, menu transparency, and authenticity across its menu of freshly made and healthier for you meal options. From a single unit in 2010 to now over 150 locations in 17 states nationwide, Steve has catapulted the brand to boast system-wide sales in excess of $100 million each year. Steven, thank you very much for being with us today. I truly appreciate it.
Well, Gary, I appreciate being on the show and look forward to catching up on a few things.
Great, great. So why don't you maybe fill in some blanks, if there is some blanks there, and what you've been doing and what you've been up to lately, and then we'll get into our question.
You know, I think you provided a nice overview. During the past year, obviously, there were a variety of different challenges. The upside to it for us is being health and wellness being top of mind. You know, we were able to come out of the pandemic with a stronger balance sheet, with double-digit comp sales. We opened about 20 locations, during the pandemic. So we're up to about 180 as we speak today, with another 100 in development. So I think things are heading, for us, things are strong. They're heading in the right direction. We've got a lot of guest engagement, involvement. And expanding in new cities, new communities, new states. And so I'm excited about what's to come.
Well, that's great. And I what I've seen a lot in the better for you, healthier for you concepts during the pandemic, people have been driven to those. I see acai. I represent an acai brand, and his sales have been absolutely phenomenal as people gravitate towards that, just in general. But I think the pandemic brought it maybe more into focus with respect to how people want to live their lives and what they put into their bodies. The fact that you've opened up locations during the pandemic is terrific. We have worked with clients who have done that, and we've seen now here in the New York area, where we really got hit hard with the pandemic, we've seen a lot of opportunities with second generation restaurant space, opportunities to go into spaces that cost a little bit less to open up, more flexible landlords. So I guess out of the crisis and the tragedy that's been the last year here in the U.S., there are opportunities for people who can, first of all, see them as opportunities and then take advantage of them. So it's very exciting to hear that about Nectar. I guess one of the things that I like to talk about, and I like to hear from people like yourself who have built this amazing brand really in the last 11 years, 10 years. Tremendous number of units. You've got a great footprint. A lot of today's branding and brand messaging is done digitally. I mean, I'm from the old school days of, you know, newspaper ads. Okay. but I've transitioned into the digital era. And I would like to know what insights you might be able to share with us in terms of what you feel the necessary ingredients are to drive a sound digital strategy, and what you used and will be using to set up your brand for 2021 and beyond.
You know, that's really a multi-pronged, you know, question, really, mm-hmm. because obviously you have, you know, the base in which you want to start your digital communications and also what you're trying to accomplish. You know, in today's era, you know, apps, convenience, optimization, a variety of different things have become required, really, in almost all spaces that that we look at. Fortunately, I believe we're on the forefront on the digital and the app front, in the sense of we launched our app, and going back to your newspaper example, in 2016, we launched our app, you know, really prior to anybody in our space having it. And we converted people out of little punch cards, you know, you punch 9 and get 10th juice free or something. And the uproar that we got from our guests and that kind of stuff was just, they just weren't used to it. They didn't like it. They didn't, you know, so it was a transitional period, you know. I remember Starbucks when they switched from, you know, 10 drinks, get free coffee, to the amount of money spent. They got a ton of pushback, but subsequently it worked out quite well. You know, for us, we started out, you know, and the goal was basically convenience, customization, and a variety of different things. We started out in 2016. I think we had, we signed up about 10,000 people the first number of months in January of 16. And you fast forward to today, and, we're bearing down on almost 800,000 people on our app, which considering the size of our company and compared to a lot of people in our space and other spaces, is a tremendous amount of people. And it gets a lot of use. There's a lot of engagement customization that we use for a variety of different reasons. So I'll just gonna stop there for a second. Let us.
Well, you know. So you mentioned a lot there in terms of the, you know, using digital and increasing the footprint of the brand, which again, I'm just a big believer. I just think it's the way that the world is headed. Certainly no one needs me to say that. It's very obvious. You mentioned the app that you launched in 2016 and that it provides a certain level of convenience and engagement. So I understand the convenience piece because I'm one of those people that orders on an app and then kind of goes in and gets my coffee. I do that. But I'm curious to know if there's how you use the data that you're collecting to remarket to your guests, maybe increase frequency of visit, help your franchisees use that platform as a way to increase their sales, as well as inform your guests to perhaps new products, things of that nature.
You know, as they always said, you know, the key is the data. You know, what do you do with that data? And we've obviously got a lot of people, we have a lot of transactions, and you've got to optimize it. As an example, let's say that you like acai bowls, which you mentioned, right? Mm-hmm. But if, as an example, I'm sending out an offer that is constantly for juices or a cleanse, that just doesn't provide much interest to you. So therefore, our goal is to basically customize, you know, each of those 800,000 emails that is specific to that individual. So if you're, say your acai bowls, my example might be, tell you what, get an acai, you might get an offer from us that is a acai bowl, and for an extra $2, get protein popper snack for later in the day. And so I think the individual, you know, customization is critical, and how you use that data. Clearly you want to win back. You've got your frequent guests. You have those people that you've maybe lost, and depending on whether it's 30 days, 60 days, 90 days or longer, you have win back campaigns with the offers increasing depending on, you know, how long they've been, you know, haven't been to the store. So, you know, obviously we go to entice them to, you know, to come back in and get a free bowl or a juice or a smoothie, or it depends on what the incentive may be. But it's critical to understand who your data, you know, who your clients are, what they like, and the trends that you're heading in.
Yeah, I agree. It's you know, the collection of data and the use of the data to me is key now in really expanding a business. I When we take on a client, it's one of the very first things we look at, because we find very often, especially emerging brands, if they've been around for a long time, meaning, you know, a company store or two or three company stores, and they've been around for a long time, maybe it's a legacy brand. A lot of that technology or that technology mindset is not baked into the franchise equation. And I see that as a huge piece to the franchise equation, because franchisees want to know, how are you going to help me get customers? How do I keep people coming in? So aside from the app, what about things like social media platforms? I mean, you've got great looking products. They're very colorful. They're very enticing. How do you use, say, Facebook, Instagram, and not only how do you use them, but talk us through how you maybe guide or limit your franchisees to a certain extent from having their own digital platforms.
Yeah, and people have to be careful with that. And what I mean by that is that, yeah, you may have heard the story. It might have been Denny's or somebody out there, and they've got, you know, 3,500 locations or whatever it is. And one of the franchisees happened to, you know, announce on Instagram or Facebook his support of Trump. You know, all of a sudden CNN runs the headline news, Denny's supports Trump. You know, it's one of 3,500 franchisees. It certainly doesn't represent the brand or, you know, what the company thinks. And so, you know, that's just an indication of, you know, how tricky social media can be. So we have a platform in which it allows, so we have all our franchisees have access to, you know, their own Instagram and Facebook account that is regional, specific to their exact community and location. We have national content in which we push out to all locations, you know, every day, as it is fresh content that's relevant. And then we also give the franchisees access in which they can post. You know, you might have a situation in which there's an ice storm and you might be closing early, in which you can announce. So maybe a baseball team did something, or you might want to draw people in and say, hey, it's raining, come in and get free ginger shot today. And so you can go on our platform. It goes through an approval process. It's all automated. So we don't have somebody putting something out there that's, you know, it's a quick example, which I thought was kind of funny story. I thought it was funny. A few people got a little upset about it, but we had one girl post a picture of them smoking a joint in the back by the walk-in cooler. and it was like,
oh boy,
you know, it was on 420, and I'm not a pot guy or anything like that. So I think the date's 420, whatever that day is, you know, it's the thing.
Yes.
And the caption was going really green today, you know, but clearly for the brand, you know, again, I found some humor in it. Some other people didn't. We got to take it down pretty quickly. And then we realized, yeah, we need to put some filters in place to do it. But we also understood that we've got to have the franchisees engage in the community. And so we assist them a great deal in that aspect. Our marketing team, our LSM team is very engaged with on that aspect. So those kind of things, Facebook, Instagram, Yelp to get new people. You know, LSM has changed quite a bit during the last year, because you can't go out and sample and walk around and do what you normally did. So a lot of the LSM now is, through a very aggressive geofencing, you know, digital campaigns through the platforms that I mentioned. They're very specific to that location.
Yep,
and beacon technology too. So
I was gonna bring up, you know, the Yelp and the Google My Business, and I think, you know, you used the term geofencing again. A lot of these things, a lot of brands aren't doing. And what always surprises me is these things are available on sort of a level playing field. It's not like the company has to be able to afford an ad on the Super Bowl. I mean, essentially anyone can do these things, anyone running a business, even a single unit. And I think that it's key that everyone have a digital strategy going forward as they look to promote their brand. That being said, during the pandemic, and I think what I'm about to say, I know there was this huge, huge increase in third-party ordering platforms and things of that nature. And we've seen that here in New York. Some of my clients have been complaining about it, quite honestly, because so much of their sales are on that, you know, commission-based, you know, the Grubhubs of the world and the Uber Eats and that sort of stuff. And it's helped them, but at some point it will tail back. But I see the third-party ordering platforms and things of that nature as part of a digital strategy, because they present what they do on digital platforms, and you want to be, you may want to be part of their, you know, you may want to be on their platform. So I guess the first part of this is Nectar using third-party ordering platforms and things of that nature?
Yeah, I mean, we're fully engaged in the DSPs, you know, which include obviously the, you know, the Postmates, DoorDash, Uber Eats of the world, and they're all integrated directly into our POS. So anytime an order comes in, it goes right into our POS, the ticket prints in the back of the house, the order's made, it goes to the fridge. So it's a very seamless transition. The argument, obviously, initially, and the argument maybe still today, is it incremental? But, you know, are these DSPs incremental business? You know, and that's a debatable question. As far as the commissions, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's a you're paying a lot of money, you know, for that product to be delivered. But it is a, you know, it is, I don't know about a necessary evil, but it is now taking up a significant amount of our orders. You know, if you combine that with the app, the in you know, the walkthrough traffic compared to the digital traffic is, you know, almost 50-50, really. Right. But if you engage with them, I think that there are various opportunities. I mean, if you make some commitments with some of the DSPs, such as a DoorDash or a Postmates at certain times of the year, and do some promotions for, all right, we'll pay for 1 week of delivery, they pay for another week of delivery, we'll do a BOGO offer, they'll offset it by X or Y, or, you know, we'll be on top of the juice category for this or that. And frequently we've seen numbers, we've had, I don't necessarily want to do case studies, but we've done various A/B tests in which we've seen sales come in at 42,000, but then we switched it to free delivery in the following week through the same DSP, 174,000. Mm. So, you know, so you've really got to understand what the capabilities are of the DSPs. Yep. And what your real cost and what the net is out of it, because I think that there are a lot of opportunities within them. It's just really trying to embrace them, negotiate the best rates. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, if they're able to continue to maintain these, you know, high commission rates and delivery charges that they do as the pandemic slows down a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. I think we'll see a slowdown, but clearly it's not going back to what it was pre-pandemic. And the reason I bring it up is because I see the same users. So folks who are participating in, you know, your digital strategy, as you described it, and with Instagram, these are the same people most likely to be using an app or using a third-party delivery service. And so for me, I just see it all as one big piece. But I agree. I think how you use them and how you view them also, I think a big piece is, are you viewing them simply as a delivery service or an ordering service, or are you integrating your marketing strategy and saying, wait a minute, they're actually marketing my brand also, and they're doing it digitally, and we can kind of integrate what they're doing with what we're doing. So I think that's a big piece of it, as you point out. What you know, what's on the horizon for Nectar? Where do you see yourself and the brand going in 2021, 22, like the next couple of years?
You know, we started off the brand basically in 2010, and as you had mentioned early on, to disrupt the space, to provide health and wellness to anybody who really desired a healthy lifestyle, and that was our goal. Mm-hmm. And you know, that is more relevant really today than it was, you know, 10 years ago. So I think the brand continues to evolve. I think technology is certainly part of it. I think as far as the product offerings, I think people a lot of times have to be very careful in the sense of, you know, too often people try and be everything to everybody. And I've had conversations with CEOs of some of the competitors, and when they tell me that, you know, they want to have something to sell everybody in their store, I just shake my head. I don't tell them what my answer is, but, you know, that's what I believe. And so as I look to the future, you know, we look at natural, you know, just like you mentioned with Asa, you look at what natural brand extensions are that you can offer, whether it's bowls and you add a layer to the bowl so it's a little bit different, or you have, you know, add some protein poppers or things of that nature, but you don't go to peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. So, you know, you've got to, so I think the important thing is to, and you also look at the, you know, what the footprint is, as we talked about, the, you know, the future, you know, we've got some locations that are, you know, almost 1900, 2000 square feet. You simply don't need that much space anymore, you know? So the footprint will be less expensive to build out. yet I think just as profitable as sales continue. We're, you know, double digit comp since, you know, last year sometime. I can't remember when it started, but, you know, obviously we're down when the pandemic started, but since then, you know, since we hit the low, we've been comping positively. So I think that to build it out, I think is going to be, you know, less expensive. And as far as the growth, we've got about 100 stores in the pipeline as we speak. We've got an R&D team that's very aggressive in looking at, you know, what those next offerings are, which you'll see some come up that we'll announce. I won't go into details now, but, you know, they'll be coming up in the fall. But I think the goal is to make sort of not overreact, not try and be everything to everybody, take those baby steps to the next iteration of who you are. And then a lot of the evolution of us will be behind the scene things that people won't see that provides a greater convenience and capability for somebody to maintain a lifestyle in which provides a, you know, health and wellness and things that I think that are, you know, integral part of anybody's lifestyle.
Yep. I agree. And that's great news. And it's exciting, obviously, to hear how many units you've got in the pipeline that you're opening. And I think simplicity of operation, which kind of gets tied to, you know, not wanting to be all things to all people. I see this mistake all the time with franchisors in an effort to be all things to all people. They just gum up the works and now they're not delivering, you know, they're not delivering quality product and no longer is the operation simple. Which thwarts the entire franchise model. If you wanted to be a multi-unit franchisee, it's simpler to do it with a simple operation than a complicated operation. And I think the integrity of the brand, I think people, you know, I remember back in the 90s when McDonald's started selling pizza and tacos and Lord knows what else, you almost didn't know what you were in a McDonald's for. And then, you know, they kind of went back to selling cheeseburgers, fries, shakes, and soda. And you said, okay, that's what they do. And I think if you extend the brand to the point where you're trying to be all things to all people, you just confuse the guests. They no longer know what you stand for. So I agree.
Well, and I think for the franchisee, I think the other thing that's critical and a differentiator between us and a lot of brands is, we have 40 corporate locations. And so anything that we're going to do, you know, we're going to run one. We've been through almost any experience that somebody could go through. Two, we've invested millions. So we're investing in ourselves. So we want to try something and test something. You know, we've got a lot of access to our locations, you know, for a variety of different, you know, reasons and things that we're looking at. And so it, you know, confounds me sometimes when you see some of these franchise brands and they've got, you know, 200, 300, 500 locations, but one corporate store, you know, or two corporate stores or a handful of corporate stores. It's hard to, you know, for me, I, you know, unless I feel confident in what we're doing, I don't want to release it to a franchisee. And, you know, through the last 10 years, you know, we've learned a lot and we take those lessons and obviously we share them and convey that to the community. And I think that by investing the, you know, the millions of dollars with our own locations and continuing to own and operate it, you know, is an integral part and a differentiator compared to, you know, almost certainly anybody in our space and, you know, in a lot of spaces. It's just an important thing to do, I think.
Yeah, no, I agree. And unfortunately, there are some, I don't want to say many or most, but there are some franchisors that don't practice what you just stated. And, you know, for me, you know, I want to know for my clients are franchisors. So I want to know how much skin they have in the game. Because if you're going to do everything on the back of the franchisee with the franchisee's money, I'm not so sure you should be a franchisor. So look, any last thoughts you want to leave us with about digital, about Nectar? What would you like to leave us with?
You know, again, I think that, you know, we're excited about the future. I think that, you know, all of us should be. I think, you know, we're hopefully at light at the end of the tunnel as it relates to the pandemic. We're in solid footing. We've got a new menu refresh coming out this summer with some exciting new items, but still a menu that's simple and not intimidating, yet healthy. We've got some other new products, add-ons that are coming out. We've got some new cities and states. We're beginning a strong franchise push to spread across America, so to speak. So if anybody's interested, they can certainly go to our, you know, nectarjuicebar.com website franchise and reach out to us. We'd love to, you know, talk about it and go in detail. We're very particular on who we on who we partner with. And a lot of times I'll want to fly out myself and meet with them and talk to them, especially a new town or city or state. Because again, I feel like it's my name that I'm putting out there, so to speak. And I don't want to go someplace unless I feel it's a place that'll work, unless it's somebody that's going to represent the brand well. But if somebody's interested in, in Nectar and bringing it to their community, welcome them to reach out, and look forward to talking to myself and the rest of our team and learning more about what we do. But the future looks bright, the wind's at our back, and assuming we can not make too many dumb mistakes, I think we'll be all right.
Well, that's really great news to hear. And again, for those of you who are listening on the actual post for the podcast, there is a link if you want to contact Nectar and learn more about the concept. Steve, thank you so much. It's really been an honor to have you on the program today. I look forward to perhaps meeting you in person someday at an IFA conference, if we ever go back to having live conferences or at a multi-unit conference meeting. I truly am appreciative of your time today.
Well, Gary, I've heard a lot of great things about you, and it's really a treat to spend some time with you. Thank you for having me on the show.
Thank you. I'm flattered. Be well.
You too.